I think the richness of this conference is that there are people from all the different continents of the world bringing their experience of safeguarding and both the opportunities and the problems that arise from that. I think in England and Wales, one of the things that we can learn from other people is the way in which survivors or victims of abuse are helped to come back into contact with the life of the church, but more generally to have a sense of healing and that their problems are addressed in a just way, that they feel that the church hasn't abandoned them, but the church actually does seek their well-being.
And what concrete measures are there in place to support these victims in England and Wales? Can you give us some examples?
At the moment, through the National Catholic Safeguarding Commission, there are ongoing discussions with certain groups of survivors, and we're really sort of making beginnings in those areas. But because people are obviously very hurt and wounded, it takes time and it takes patience, and we have to build up the trust between the church again and these particular groups. But I think the other thing also is that there are many people who don't belong to any particular group who have in the past experienced abusive behaviour, and they are in contact either with their local parish or the diocesan safeguarding commission teams, and they are building up relationships with them. I'm always pleasantly surprised at the number of people who still want to keep contact with the church because they feel that they belong to the church, even though there are some who are very much wounded and have left the church.
And what sort of percentage would that be, those that have left the church?
To be honest, I don't know. We need to do some investigation into that area. But I think there are certainly a number who have left the church, and in such a way that we, in a sense, both with them and with others, we need to restore our credibility. But I think that that is happening. Not that we are complacent, but that we have put into practice procedures which enable people to bring to the fore when they have been abused or feel that they have been ill-treated by the church or members of the church.
Now, I know another of the themes was risk management of offenders. What does that entail? And, I mean, what is the prevailing belief about offenders? Are you once an offender, always an offender?
I think there is a difference of opinion about that. There will be those who say there is some evidence to show that somebody who has offended can be cured, but I think the majority of people would still say that paedophilia is not something that you can be cured from. It's something that has to be managed. And the people who are suffering from paedophilia need to be managed, especially once they've come out of prison or carried out some sort of probationary service. So what happens is that a covenant of care is drawn up so that these people can exercise and practice their faith as best they can, but within a safe environment. Because these people, as well as victims, they also need the help of others in order to live a life of dignity, but also not to be offenders again for the future. So it's also, covenant of care is not just about the offender, it's also about the offended as well.
What lessons can a country like England and Wales or, say, Australia, who've been really in the forefront of putting into practice robust procedures to safeguard children and try to prevent abuse, what can they teach to perhaps developing countries who may not yet have those procedures up and running?
I think what we can share with others is our experience, the experience of what it meant to first be confronted by these allegations and how we dealt with them, how we dealt with them in a positive way, but also how we made mistakes as well. And so we can share with other countries those experiences, recognising, of course, at the same time that we come from different cultures, and within those different cultures there are particular problems which may not be universal.
Some of those problems may be that in some countries, I'm thinking here of Africa, for instance, homosexuality is often considered a crime. This must create even more difficulties perhaps to uncover cases of clerical sex abuse, couldn't it?
I think one of the things that's been we've been reminded of at this conference is that homosexuality and paedophilia are not synonymous, that they do not go together. Homosexuality or heterosexuality can produce people who are paedophiles on both sides, if you like. I think one of the things about homosexuality is that in some countries it is still regarded as a crime, but it should not be equated with paedophilia. One of the things I would like to say is the richness that the African and the Asian countries who are here for the first time have brought to this conference from their own experience, what they're also trying to do. And one of the things that we have been reminded of by some of the African countries is the whole area of conspiracy of silence, that people don't like bringing accusations against priests and other people in authority. And it's a breaking down of that silence so that people can speak and bring to the fore their complaints and their experiences and what's been happening to them. That's one of the challenges that some of the African countries have been telling us that they have to face.
Now, where do we go from here? I mean, how confident are you that the procedures you've got in place are now as shortite as they can be in such a situation? Or do you think there are further improvements that could be made?
I think we've always got to be vigilant, but I think we can say that we've put into practice procedures which, as best we can, make safe communities for young people and vulnerable adults. But we've always got to be vigilant and never sort of sit back and say, well, we've done it all. Because paedophilia is not something that can be wiped out. There's always going to be a risk factor in any community, and we've just got to minimise that risk factor.
One of the ways, presumably, is better screening of candidates to the priesthood and religious life. Are you confident that there too, shall we say, at the source, there's these screening practices are much better now at weeding out people that could possibly prove to be offenders in this regard?
The importance of those screening factors has been discussed at this conference, and the necessity of them as well. I think certainly I can only speak for England and Wales, that the screening practices that have been put into place are as best they can be, and hopefully there will be far less people coming through, or any people coming through, who are prone to paedophilia.
What about raising awareness of the risk of sexual abuse amongst, shall we say, lay Catholics, the faithful? What sort of measures? I mean, do you have notices up in the church, you know, sort of telling people how to act if they have a suspicion or something?
Within the parishes in England and Wales, there's usually the name of the diocesan safeguarding coordinator and a telephone number that people can contact. So if people have concerns, then they can contact the diocesan officer. And in most parishes as well, there's also a safeguarding officer whose name is advertised on church notice boards. But I think one of the challenges that we note is that safeguarding needs to be seen in a positive way. It's not just about stopping offences. It's actually making our communities into places that are safe for young people, and also where vulnerable adults can also feel that they are safe and secure. So I think it needs to be seen as a positive proclamation of the gospel. This is the church proclaiming new sight to the blind, healing to those who are wounded, and enabling those who are crippled to walk again. So it is the whole area of safeguarding is part of the gospel message and not something that's just added on to it.
And presumably also you must give publicity to what you're doing on this, because this was obviously a damaging episode for the church, and to show, shall we say, the wider society outside, shall we say, the Catholic Church, that you have this robust procedures in place is an important message that needs to be got out to the wider community.
It's an important message. It's something which Pope Benedict handled brilliantly, if I may say so, when he came on his visit to England and Wales and Scotland. As you may know, there were people who were doubtful about Pope Benedict's visit, but from the moment he arrived in the country, he showed a sensitivity to what is going on in the country, and he showed a pastoral care. And I think he enabled the church, in a sense, to be able to proclaim the gospel in a more positive way, and to show that we are taking this whole area of safeguarding in a serious manner.